All of us must make decisions on a daily basis, every one of us. Life is full of choices, some big, some small, some in between. But every one of the choices and decisions we make on a daily basis are all important in our journey toward the kingdom of God. They either add to that journey toward the kingdom or take away from that journey toward the kingdom. So today I want to discuss 5 points to help us make wise decisions. No matter who we are, we're going to be making decisions. And there are ways that we can make wise decisions as opposed to unwise decisions. It is a tremendous blessing to have help from God in our decision-making process. This keeps us from making snap decisions, knee-jerk decisions, and wrong choices that can lead to big problems and, frankly, even disaster. And that's how serious it is. Let's turn to Proverbs chapter 14. Proverbs chapter 14 and verse 12. God inspired this verse. It says, "There is a way that seems right unto a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death." There's another verse that says this as well. When you really consider what verse 12 says, it gets to be pretty serious. It seems right. It seems logical. It seems practical. It seems like the choice we ought to make, or choices. It seems like the decision we ought to make. And we can be convinced of it. But in actual fact, in the end, it can lead to death. So we want to make sure that we are developing a ability and a way to make wise decisions. Now, decisions are actually more than choosing. There's a subtle difference between choosing and decision making. They go together. But to choose is to select or pick out something. To decide follows that, and it means to settle and to make up our minds. So they go together. But decision making really involves character building or character erosion, and charts out the direction that we're going to be going. And so it would be good if we all improve our decision making. I see some really good decisions being made by people in the church, wise decisions, smart choices. And that's very encouraging. And that's what we want to do. We want to get to where our decision making process and choice process is getting wiser and wiser. And there are things that we can do that make a difference in that. It can save us all kind of grief, all kind of mistakes. It can save us trouble and pain and money and all of the rest. And of course, all decisions ought to involve safety. We ought to think about the safety of what we're doing, the safety of the choice, the safety of the decision. But the first point I want to emphasize as far as making wise decisions is this. Ask God for wisdom in making a decision. Now, that might seem obvious and a given, but I wonder how many of us actually do this. Do we ask God for wisdom in making decisions? Let's turn to James chapter 1. James chapter 1 and verse 5. Look at this promise here. What a wonderful promise, and it's real. If any of you lack wisdom, and I know I lack wisdom, I maybe have a little bit, but I need more. If any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God. And frankly, I try to do that every day, and you probably do as well. And he will give it to us. Notice what it says here. If any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God that gives to all men liberally and upbraideth not, and it shall be given him. Look at that wonderful blessing, that wonderful promise. So in our lives and in our decision making and in our choice process, if on a regular basis and every day in our prayers, silently and on our knees and otherwise, one of the things we beseech God for is wisdom, he's going to give it to us. And it's going to make a difference in the choices we make and in the direction we go in our life and in the decisions that we settle on. But let him ask in faith, nothing wavering, for he that wavers is like a wave of the sea driven with the wind and tossed. For let not that man think that he shall receive anything of the Lord. We can't ask God for wisdom and then doubt it. We got to ask God for wisdom and then have faith that he's going to give us wisdom and help us make wise decisions by giving us wisdom and by giving us guidance. Let's turn to Proverbs chapter 2 A lot of places in the Bible talk about wisdom and how God will give it to us and how we need to have it and how it makes all the difference in the world in everything we do, really. Wisdom is the application of knowledge and doing it in a way that's really the best. Proverbs chapter 2 and verse 6. For the Lord gives wisdom. That's the source. The Lord gives wisdom. We can't buy it. We can't earn it. But we can ask him for it, and the Bible says he'll give it to us. For the Lord gives wisdom. Out of his mouth comes knowledge and understanding. He lays up sound wisdom for the righteous. He stores it up for the righteous. He is a buckler, a shield to them that walk uprightly. He keeps the paths of judgment and preserves the way of his saints. Isn't that wonderful? What a blessing. God preserves the way of his saints. And I think we know that, but it's good to be reminded of it. It's so encouraging. If we are really striving to please him and obey him and go his way, he preserves our way. He's right there with us, and he gives us wisdom. Then shalt you understand righteousness and judgment and equity, even every good path. When wisdom enters into your heart, look at this now, what a blessing. When wisdom enters into your heart, into your mind, and knowledge is pleasant unto your soul, discretion shall preserve you, understanding shall keep you. Those are all blessings that come when wisdom enters into our lives. And the first thing to do when it comes to wisdom is to ask God for it. Now, how does this apply, these decision-making principles that we're going to go through? Well, they apply right across the board. Let's say you're thinking about buying a house or selling a house. Perhaps buying a car or selling a car. Maybe you're thinking about changing careers. Should I go to college? Should I not go to college? Which college? Maybe you have problems that you need help with as far as solving them. Maybe you're thinking about moving somewhere, or you have questions that need answering, or that you need to learn something and you haven't been able to learn it yet. All of this figures into this decision-making process. Or somewhere down the road, some of you might be thinking about marriage. Well, certainly wisdom would be a good thing to have when you start making that decision. Probably in all the years I've been in the ministry, one of the things that I've been involved in as far as counseling and as far as decision-making is concerned pretty often have been family situations and marriage. And so quite often a couple have come to me and said, well, we've decided to get married. We want to counsel with you. And I said, well, the counseling should have taken place before you decided to get married. In fact, the counseling should have taken place before you decided to be engaged. That wasn't wisdom, see, to just go ahead and make the decision, get the rings, and, okay, we're going to get married, but we want to come and counsel with you about whether we should or whether we shouldn't and so on and so forth. So ask God to give you wisdom and seek that before you make the final decision. Seek that while you're in the process of making the decision. Seek that so that it will guide you as you make that decision. That's very, very important. Okay, the second point and second step to wise decisions is we need to make sure we get the facts. We get the facts. Get all the facts. Take time to do it. We want to make decisions based on the truth, not on supposition, not on emotion, not on hearsay, but on the truth. Let's turn to Proverbs chapter 31 and verse 16. Interesting point here. We're reading about the virtuous woman and all of her strengths. And notice here in verse 16, it says, she considers a field and buys it. Now, what does that mean, she considers a field? Does she just go walking along, see a field, and say, I'll buy it? No, it says she considers a field. When you study the word consider, you see that there are aspects to that that mean you're going to get the facts. You're going to weigh it out. You're going to look at different aspects of the question or of the decision. And you're going to do that before you make that decision. And before she bought that field, she considered it. That means she got the facts. She took time to find out what it was about. What kind of field is it? What's been grown there? That's what I think this means. Why do I want to buy it? What do I want to grow there? Why did I want to buy this field and not the other one? And so on and so forth. Let's turn to Luke chapter 14. Now we can apply this, as I said, we can apply these principles to many different things. I can't cover every one of them, but we could apply it, let's say, to, okay, I want to purchase a house. Say you're going to purchase a house. Do you just drive up in front of the house and say, I like it, I'll take it, I'll buy it? That's not wise. That's a big step. You won't have to make that decision very often in your life, and it can be a wonderful one, and it can be a disaster, depending on how we go about doing that and how we go about making the decision. Notice here in Luke chapter 14 and verse 28, Jesus Christ talking here about counting the cost. For which of you, intending to build a tower or house or build anything, sits not down first and counts the cost, whether he has sufficient to finish it? Counts the cost. That's a big territory, counting the cost. When you're going to buy a house or a car or something, counting the cost doesn't mean just how much the house is going to be. It means a whole lot of other facts. He counts the cost, whether he has sufficient to finish it, lest haply after he has laid the foundation and is not able to finish it, all that behold it began to mock him, saying, this man began to build and was not able to finish. So there's all kind of questions. What is the history of the house? How old is it? What kind of integrity is there? Is the plumbing good? The electricity good? What about the roof? What about the yard? What about the neighborhood? What kind of neighborhood is it in? Where is it positioned in relation to your work and so on? One very key important question to ask about anything just about that you buy is, can you sell it? Let's say the time comes for you to move. Are you going to be able to sell this house? How long has it been vacant? Who was there before you got there? See, you want to get all these facts, all the facts, and weigh them out. And don't spin any of them. And don't talk yourself into it. Get the facts, stark, real, practical facts, and take a look at them. And base it on truth. That's very important to make a wise decision. The third step is we need to make sure and seek wise counsel, objective counsel. Counsel from people who will tell us like it is and not what we want to hear necessarily, or maybe what they say is something that is what we wanted to hear, but they're going to be objective and they're going to be honest and they're going to be wise. They're not going to make the decision for you. They're not going to make your choices. You have to make up your own mind, but they can ask questions and they can draw on their own experiences and they can point out pitfalls, and they can help you consider blind spots. I've often talked about how you can be driving along in a car and you can look in all the mirrors and it looks like you're clear to pass, and somebody can be in a blind spot and you can pull out and run right into them. But somebody who's following you, they see that car right up there by you. See? So sometimes people see things we don't see because we're so close to the forest, we can't see the trees. And that's one of the reasons why getting wise counsel, not asking them to make your mind up for you and make your decision for you, but to give you input, give you observations, raise questions, help you think about things you might not have thought of. That's why it's so important to follow this third point and seek wise counsel. Let's turn to Proverbs chapter 15 and verse 22. Proverbs chapter 15 and verse 22. This is something that used to be done a lot in the church, but people have gotten away from it, and they don't think about counseling before they make decisions now. Or they counsel with whoever will tell them what they want to hear instead of whoever will tell them the way it is. It's not a matter of asking somebody to make up your mind or make the decision for you. It's a matter of getting input from wise counsel. Proverbs 15 and verse 22. Without counsel, purposes are disappointed. You can be overlooking something. I can be overlooking something. There may be something you don't know about that somebody does know about and has experienced it. You don't have to make the same mistake they make. Without counsel, purposes are disappointed, or plans go awry, another translation says. But notice this, but in the multitude of counselors, they are established. Get a cross-section. If you're going to buy a house, don't talk to just one realtor. Talk to more than one realtor. Get an evaluation and maybe talk to somebody who knows about that house. And then talk to one bank and talk to another banker, or whoever's going to finance it. And maybe you want to talk to your friends, your parents. Maybe you want to talk to some relatives. You might want to talk to the minister and discuss the whole thing. You want to get wise counsel about buying this house or this car or making this career move or solving this problem. You'll make a better decision if you do that, and the more objective the counsel, the better. Notice what David said, too. Here's another source of counseling or counselors that maybe we don't think about too often. Let's turn over here to Psalms chapter 119. Psalms chapter 119. And verse 24. David said this, Psalms 119 and verse 24. Your testimonies also are my delight and my counselors. Did you ever think about the Bible as being a book of counselors? You find lots of very wise counselors in the Bible, starting in Genesis and going all the way through Revelation, and especially in Psalms and Proverbs and Ecclesiastes and some of these places, and in the Gospels. And so when you are looking for wise counsel, one of the main areas you go to is, I'm going to look in the Bible and see what the Bible has to say about the situation that I'm thinking about addressing. See what the Bible has to say about this decision that I face, the principles, the things to look for, the things to do, the things not to do, and so on and so forth. And you'll find principles in the Bible that will help. Your testimonies also are my delight and my counselors. And when you're asking God to guide you in this, He will. That's keeping God in the picture. And that's using the scriptures. Because every situation we face in life is either directly or indirectly covered by scriptures in the Bible. Directly or indirectly. So you need to bring the Bible right on into the wise counseling. And David says it. Your testimonies also are my delight and my counselors. Now let's notice Hebrews chapter 13. Hebrews 13 and verse 7, speaking of the ministry, referring to church government, says, remember them which have the rule over you, or the lead over you, or are your guides, who have spoken unto you the word of God, whose faith follow, considering the end, considering the outcome of their conduct, and that is Jesus Christ, the same yesterday, today, and forever. We're headed toward the kingdom. We're headed toward becoming more like Jesus Christ. And as ministers, that's our main job, is to help the church do that. But in the process, we can also, with God's guidance and help, give some counseling. And hopefully it's wise counseling. And it's confidential. It needs to be kept confidential. Now, don't shop around until you find someone who will tell you what you want to hear. But you might get various sources of input. But when you get to the ministers and you get to church government, you don't want to be jumping around and comparing ministers and finding contradictions or trying to. You want to make sure that you listen and ask God to guide them, and then ask them to give you counsel regarding this decision, regarding this direction, regarding this idea, regarding these choices that you're making. Then God will guide them, and you can weigh what they say and factor it into other things that go into you making this decision. You have to make it, though. They're not going to make it for you. They don't have that authority, and they shouldn't. Notice here in verse 17 of Hebrews 13, obey them that have the rule over you. That, of course, is in church matters, and they are the guides and the leaders in the church. And submit yourselves, cooperate with them, for they watch for your souls as they that must give account, that they may do it with joy and not with grief, for that is unprofitable for you. So the ministers are here to help. The church government is in place for safety's sake and for the help of everyone, if it's used properly. It's loving leadership, Mr. Armstrong often said. And so your parents enter into the counselors that you might talk to, your relatives, your friends. There might even be a time you want to talk to a lawyer, an accountant, the ministry. Just get wise counselors and a multitude of counselors, and then kind of start adding it all up and settling on a basic theme that you keep hearing from the counselors, and factor that into the other things that you've looked at regarding this decision you're making about whatever it might be. The fourth point in this process of wise decision making is consider the pros and the cons. Sit down with a piece of paper and pen and just, okay, I'm thinking about buying this house. Here are the good things about it. We like it. It's in a good place. It's been well taken care of. It's going to give us more room. It hasn't been vacant long, and people are wanting to buy it, so I think we could resell it if we needed to. And there's a lot of pros there. But what about the cons or the things that aren't so great? It's going to need some repairs. The roof is going to have to be repaired. How much is that going to cost? And there's good neighbors on the right side, but on the left side, I heard all kinds of trouble from the neighbors over there and a lot of going and coming of different unsavory characters. So that's the thing that's against it. And as you go through the house, you might find that it's got enough bedrooms, but not enough bathrooms. So you got to put that over here on the minus column and just weigh this out in the pros and cons as you consider buying this house. You know, one of the favorite sayings of one of our sons was, be always sure you're right, then go ahead. Davy Crockett said that. That's a good principle. It's actually a biblical principle. Be always sure you are right, and then go ahead. So that takes considering the pros and cons of the decision you're making about going to college, or which college, or the job you're thinking about taking, or which job. Let's turn here to 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. And verse 21 says, prove all things, hold fast that which is good. Isn't that what that little saying from Davy Crockett is saying? Be always sure you're right, then go ahead. Prove all things, hold fast that which is good. Now, this takes time to do sometime. This takes effort. This takes research and digging. But you'll be glad you did it as you are building the information you need to put together in making a wise decision guided by God. You consider the pros and cons. Let's turn to Proverbs chapter 21. So often people are hasty. They don't want to take time. They want to do what they want to do right now. And that's a mistake. They might think, well, boy, if I don't make this decision and grab this house right now, somebody else will. Well, if God wants you to have that house, and you're taking time, not letting it drag out, but you're taking time to consider, he'll keep that house for you. Proverbs chapter 21 and verse 5. And that's a good Bible study. Take time to do it sometime. Study in the Bible about the principle of being hasty, of being too quick, of being in a rush in making decisions and in making choices. And of course, we have to make choices throughout the day that these principles, not all of them, can apply. If you're driving down the road, you're making choices all the time. Should I pass? When should I pass? But you can still ask God to guide you in wisdom in making that choice of when you're going to pull out and pass and how you do it. So some of these principles can apply and some of them don't need to. But in the big choices of life and in the big decisions in life, all of these principles do apply and you can even add some to them. Notice it says here in Proverbs 21 and verse 5, the thoughts or the plans of the diligent tend only to plenteousness, but of everyone that is hasty only to want. Look at the difference there. The plans of the diligent lead to plenteousness. They take time. They consider the pros and cons. They get the facts. They ask God for wisdom. But of everyone that is hasty, only to want. They fall short. They get into trouble. They rush. It's usually an emotional decision. A lot of stores count on people making emotional decisions, and they'll set their stores up, and they'll set their goods in positions, and they'll have background music, and they'll have flashing lights, and that's designed for you to come through. And before you walk out of that store, you've decided, I want that, I want that, I want that. Then when you get home, you wonder, why did I buy that, and why did I buy that, and why did I buy that? It's best not to be taken in by that. Don't rush. Take your time. Sleep on it more than one night if you can. Time clarifies everything. I've seen that over and over and over again. You may be taken, let's say, with a particular house. But if you say, okay, well, we'll just keep on researching and looking into it, and you go home and you sleep, and you get up the next morning, you drive by, you think, not so much. But you don't give up on it. You keep looking, and you come by 2 days later, I see some things now I didn't see before, and I see some circumstances and situations that I really wouldn't want to have to deal with, and it might change your mind because you took time. Now, the other might happen as well. The more time you take and the less hasty approach you have, the more you see that house is looking better and better all the time. Waiting will only help you see more clearly the good and the bad and see more clearly to choose wisely. So don't be hasty as you consider the pros and the cons. Now let's notice number 5. Once everything adds up and you've done your work and you've put in time to properly go about making this decision, then the time comes to decide. And when you decide, stick with it. Stick with it with God's help and make it work. It will probably take perseverance. Now, there usually be 3 options. Let's say regarding this house you might be thinking about buying, or this bicycle you think you might want to buy, or this course you might want to take. One will be, yes, I want to do it. The next one will be, no, I don't want to do it. And 3 might be, I don't know. Well, I've always said this. If you don't know which way you ought to go, don't go anyway. Just wait. Wait. It's better not to make any decision and wait before you make the decision than to make one and then be sorry that you made it. Waiting will tend to help you have clarification. So there comes a time when everything adds up and now it's time for you to decide. Okay, we're going to buy the house. Okay, we're not going to buy the house. Or, okay, we don't know, so we're going to wait a while for further clarification. And then stick with that decision and persevere with that decision, and God will guide you in it. Let's notice Proverbs chapter 24. Proverbs 24 and verse 10. But if you decide, yes, we want to buy it, you may uncover some stuff that is not what you had planned, and it may take some endurance, it may take some work, it may take some effort. You may have to stick with it. You might have decided to start a business, and as time goes along, it starts to taper off, and then you wonder how you're going to make it. Well, you've got to hang in there. You've got to endure. You've got to stick with it. You've got to persevere. Remember, Mr. Armstrong talks about one of the laws of success being perseverance. He talks about how he's seen people who, if they just stayed at it a little while longer, they would have achieved success, but they didn't stick with it. They caved in. And if they'd have just kept going a little longer, he had to do that throughout his life. He had to do it with Ambassador College. You've heard him say this. I know I've heard him say it often. He said almost every day somebody would come up to him and say, well, Herbert, when you think this thing's going to fold up? And that's what people just kept thinking was going to happen. It's going to fold up. He said, if I went through one day where somebody didn't say that, it was a good day. But he knew he was looking to God. He knew he was on the right track. He knew he had made the right decision to start Ambassador College in 1947. And so he stayed with it. And look how it turned out in the long run. But there was a lot of adversity. But he was convinced it was right. And so he stuck with it and asked God to help. And God did. Notice here in Proverbs 24 and verse 10. If you faint in the day of adversity, your strength is small. We can't expect everything just to fall in place once we've made a decision. Some things will, and some things might not. We might get bushwhacked. We might have an unexpected ambush along the way. That doesn't mean you've made a bad decision. It just means you have to persevere and work your way through that. So we have to be willing to, in the face of adversity and in the face of things going rough and tough, hang in there and stick with it and make it work if it's the right decision. And if it's clear it's the right decision, and you want to see it all the way through to a good outcome, ask God to help you, and he will help you persevere. And really put in every effort that you can to make that decision work. Don't bail out because the going gets rough. That doesn't mean it's a wrong decision. It could mean you're just going to have to dig a little deeper and endure a little while longer. Let's notice Ecclesiastes chapter 9 and verse 10. Ecclesiastes 9 and verse 10, whatsoever your hand finds to do, do it with your might, for there is no work, nor device, nor knowledge, nor wisdom in the grave where you go. We're supposed to do everything we do with all of our might. We don't want to get extreme, but we want to shoot for high quality and excellence. Something that I've noticed is happening is people are settling for less, and they just want to be comfortable. They're not dressing properly, and they're not finishing up their work properly, and they accept shoddiness, and they accept mediocre results. Mediocrity settles in, and, oh, it's okay, it's good, slap it together, that's good enough. That's not good enough in God's eyes. Whatsoever your hand finds to do, do it with your might. Shoot for excellence. Do it right. Whether somebody will know about it or somebody won't know about it. I know I've been on construction sites before in the field of plumbing, and I've seen workers who are building the house, and they'll get to a particular place that's going to require some extra work, and they'll say, oh, well, they'll never know, and so they'll just cover it up with sheetrock and not do it right. And later on, that shoddiness is going to give the owner of that house some trouble. But I've also seen the other, where there's a problem, let's say, with the studs and they're twisting or whatever. And these people were excellent carpenters, and they'd say, well, we've got to take that one out and put a good one in so it doesn't twist, and put the good one in over there. Take it out, put that back in, and let it set for a while, see if it twists, didn't. And then they put the sheetrock on. They did it right. They didn't try to cover it up. And later on, a big problem could happen. I've seen people do plumbing like that, where they do it the wrong way, and there won't be a leak right away, but down the road, there's going to be a leak. And I've also seen people say, well, no, we don't want to leave it that way. Let's take that out and redo it so that there won't be a leak. But I think those kind of folks are getting more scarce all the time, especially if nobody will know one way or the other, then let's take the line of least resistance rather than whatever we do, let's do with our might. Let's build this house the way I would build it if we were building it for me, even though we're building it for somebody else. Let's do this job the way I would do it if I were doing it for my daughter or my son, even though we might be doing it for somebody else. That makes a difference in God's eyes. He wants us to do whatever we do with our might, the best we can do. He wants excellence. He wants quality, and we need to have that too. And so when we make decisions, we want to make decisions that do produce quality results, and that is pursuing excellence. And that does mean that we may have to really dig deep and hang in there and persevere in order to achieve those results. Let's notice here in Hebrews chapter 10. Hebrews chapter 10. And verse 38 says, now the just shall live by faith, but if any man draw back, my soul shall have no pleasure in him. He's talking about the coming of Jesus Christ. He's talking about enduring to the end. He's talking about continuing on in God's way, even though it can get mighty, mighty rough. But the principle holds true in every facet of life. If you set your hand to the plow, you can't look back or you won't be in the kingdom. If you set your shoulder to the wheel to make this decision and to build this company or to buy this house or to purchase this car or to go to this college, and you've done all you can and you've reached the conclusion this is the right thing to do, or you don't want to be doing that anymore, but you want to do that, and it can get kind of hard and kind of tough, don't pull back. Press on. Push ahead. Keep at it. Persevere. Once you're convinced, stick with it. But we are not of them, verse 39, who draw back unto perdition, but of them that believe to the saving of the soul. We don't draw back from adversity. Now, I do want to add one caveat. I do want to add one note of caution in this matter of making decisions. Always be willing to reverse a decision. Always be willing to reverse a decision if there is a compelling reason to do so. Now, there's some decisions you make that you can't reverse, so you just have to ride them out. But most decisions, if you come to see very, very clearly that you've made the wrong decision, be willing to stop, reverse course, and cut your losses. I've seen situations where somebody will be absolutely convinced on a trip that that's the road they ought to take. So they take that road. And others in the car might be saying, that's not the right road. We ought to go that road. No, I'm convinced it's this road. And they'll turn on that road and they'll be going down there, and maybe 100 miles later they'll come to see, this is not the right road. But because of pride and because of arrogance, they won't turn around and go back. They'll just keep on going and take the long way around, and it might take 300 or 400 miles to get back to where they ought to be, loop through mountains and valleys and everything else, whereas if they had just simply stopped, turned around, drove that 100 miles back to where they were, and then get on the right road, they'd be way ahead, but they are absolutely too stubborn to reverse the decision. Well, sometimes we make the wrong decision. And when we do and we come to see we made the wrong decision, if it's possible, be willing to reverse that decision and make the right decision then. Make the right decision. If there's a compelling reason to do so, you'll be glad you did in the long run. Instantly, two situations come to mind regarding marriage. In one case, these people had been dating and they decided to get married and they became engaged and they sent out the invitations and they set the date. They had everything in order and the fiance began to have doubts. The woman, she began to have doubts. She began to see things that she just didn't feel like that's going to work. And she began to back up and back up and think, I'm not sure about this. So she came and counseled about it and laid it out. And she made the decision, we can't get married. And so she went and talked to her husband-to-be, and even though it hit him and shocked him, he could see that she meant it, and so they called the wedding off. They refused to go forward just because everybody thought they ought to go forward. They refused to go ahead and get married just because everybody wanted them to get married. They came to realize, no, this is not going to work. In spite of the invitations, in spite of the dinner that had been set, in spite of the date that had been set, in spite of the people who were ready to come, they came to realize, no, we're the ones getting married, and we are not convinced that this is going to work. So we're going to cancel, and we're either going to wait a while, or we're going to call it off. And that's what they did. And I happened to follow up on that, and both of them have now married someone else, and they're very happily married, and they will tell you that was one of the best decisions they ever made, to call that off while they could, to reverse course and to reverse that decision, even though they were well into it. And I think this happened about a day or two before the wedding was to take place. And even though the complicated things and even though it raised questions, it was a wise decision which they entered into after much thought and after much counsel. That's just an example. Even when you're buying a house, as we've been talking about today, the way the procedure goes, even when you get down to where you're about to sign papers, it's still not too late for you to back out. You can still back out because you have found a compelling reason why you ought not do this. And some people say, oh, well, we'll do it and we'll just make it work, when in actual fact they have reasons why it may not work. But instead of being courageous, instead of being smart, they just go through with it, and then they're sorry for that for the rest of their life. Whereas some will say, I don't think we're going to buy this house. We're going to back off. We're going to let it sit for a while. And then they're very happy down the road because they found a different house that was just right for them. So in all of this process of decision-making, always reserve that point. And that is, you will reverse a decision or reverse a choice that was going to turn into a decision if you see a compelling reason for doing so, not just on a whim, not just on a feeling, but you see a compelling reason for doing so, you have the courage to say, no, I'm going to have to turn around and go the other way. So just to review on this matter of making wise decisions, ask God for wisdom in all aspects of life and for wisdom in making decisions and in making choices. And the Bible says, as we've already seen, that he will help us. Number two, get the facts. This could take some time. This could take some effort, some research. You might be surprised what you uncover when you start doing some research. The car you're about to buy might have a lien on it. And you buy it, and then somebody else may come and claim it, and then you lose the car. Get the facts. Number three, seek wise counsel. Not just anybody, but seek counsel from people you have confidence in. Wise counsel. People that have your welfare in mind and will give you objective input, not make your decision for you, but raise questions and help you think and give you objective input. Seek wise counsel. Number four, you consider the pros and the cons. Make sure you're right. Make sure that the positive things outweigh the negative things. And number five, once everything adds up and it comes down to where, okay, I'm going to make a choice. I'm going to make a decision. Go ahead and make the decision and then stick with it. If the decision is, yes, we want to move over there and live there and everything seems right, then make it work, even though it might get tough. No, we don't want to live over there. well, then don't move over there and don't sit there and wonder, should you have gone, should you have not gone? Move on and look for another place to live. Or if the decision is, I don't know, then don't make a decision one way or the other. Let the decision be, I'm going to wait and I'm going to let time clarify it before I make a decision that I'm not sure of. You'll be glad that you did that. And as I said, always be willing to reverse a bad decision or any decision that turns out to be wrong and there's compelling reason that it was the wrong decision that you made and the wrong choice. Let's notice Proverbs chapter 22. Proverbs chapter 22 and verse 29. There's so many aspects of this discussion we could go into, but I thought today we would just cover a few points that maybe could get us to think about it and get into it in more deeply in our conversations and discussions in the church. Proverbs 22 and verse 29. Seest thou a man or a woman or a child diligent in his business? He or she is very, very dependable and very, very committed and very, very careful about whatever they do. And they're diligent. They want to do it, and they want to do it right. They want to be on time, and they want to finish it up properly. Here's what's going to happen. He shall stand before kings. He shall not stand before mean men or obscure men. In other words, that's going to take him a long way in life is what that's talking about. Well, that's true when we're diligent in decision-making. If we'll use these 5 points and even add to them, and we're diligent in our decision-making and in our choices, it'll take us a long way, and it'll take us in the right direction, and we'll be doing the right thing. And the last verse is over here in 1 Corinthians chapter 12 and verse 8. You know, we hear about the gifts of the Spirit, and quite often when you talk about that, people think about healing and signs and wonders, and that's certainly part of it, and that's great, and it's wonderful when that happens. But how many times do you ever hear anybody talk about wisdom? And when it talks about the gifts of the Spirit, the very first one that is mentioned is wisdom. I wonder how many people appreciate wisdom. I noticed over the years that that's one of the things Mr. Armstrong seemed to have. He seemed to have a tremendous amount of wisdom. It grew, too, over the years. And we can have wisdom. Even children can have wisdom. They can have maturity at their age level. They can have wisdom at their age level. Women can. Men can. All of us can. With God's Spirit, we can grow in wisdom and in decision-making and in choices that we make, and things turn out better. Notice here, it talks about different gifts of the Spirit, and it says here in 1 Corinthians chapter 12 and verse 8, for to one is given by the Spirit the word of wisdom. The word of wisdom. It's a gift. To another, the word of knowledge. They can go together by the same Spirit. It is given, but God says we must ask for it. So let's ask for it, wisdom, and let's use it in all aspects of our life, including decision-making. And when we do that, we're going to find out everyone benefits from these kind of decisions. Everyone. It's better for everybody involved, peripherally and otherwise. Everyone benefits from decisions made based on wisdom. And it's that kind of wisdom that's not earthy and sensual, but it's that kind of wisdom that comes directly from our great God.